Episode 309, Ellari is here, but she isn't the only hero that is going to blow up the metagame. Yiska, it's just you and me today. Eric in the booth.
True.
Shout out to Eric, the homie, keeping things on a lockdown, keeping us high and tight. Yeah, new heroes out. It's crazy. Yiska, you just dumped a bunch of content.
True. Yeah, this was the first time I've signed up to an embargo. I think it's important that I mention this as well, because I've mentioned in the past that I had some reservations about that. For this one,
sure.
I decided it was fine for me to do that. Mm-hmm. I had been in a pretty weird position for a long time, where it's like, you know, I reported on the Sojourn and Orisa position. And then, you know, once you're really in this editorial job, your publication gains some reputation, like the nature of how you engage with stuff changes.
Mm-hmm.
The value proposition changes for your publication. So it just made sense here. Like I felt like I could add the most value there. What it also allowed me to do is to talk to the developers and ask them some pointed questions there. We're going to talk about this. But it also afforded me the privilege. And even though I would have liked to really like use this way more, ended up being a little bit challenging just because for European time zones, the times when these are available were just super inopportune for me. It's not the availability necessarily. I could just like go in the practice room. It's just like when people are available,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that unfortunately led to some inaccuracies in like how I understood some abilities to be or my evaluation to be slightly off. It's really interesting to see that in contrast. But I think overall, I have a pretty good understanding what this hero does, how it feels like. Just for viewers, we're currently 2 hours after the announcement of what she does. And I have been playing her, of course, for some weeks prior. Overall, it was an interesting experience for sure. And for various reasons, right? For getting hands-on. This is, in my opinion, the largest content drop that Overwatch has ever received.
Easily. 100%.
I feel like we're probably talking about a bigger content drop than from Overwatch 1 to Overwatch 2.
Yep, agreed.
But it depends on what kind of a player type you are, right? Like, if you're just a PvP player, then, like, this is a new map type and a new hero. That's comparable or more, or Overwatch 2 was more.
Yep.
For others who also value
too much
story
more, though,
message.
Right?
Not too much more, to be fair. If you also value the story missions or the underground stuff, which is like the King's Row stuff,
like
or
event.
Eventually the hero masteries, the hero progression system or the new battle pass, it's just a ton of stuff just coming in that I got to have a little bit of a head start in experience from. And yeah, we're going to talk about it. That's why we delayed for a day. Just made sense.
Yes.
It's just like shit to also have to sit here by embargo, just talk about like it could be the case that
if the new hero like did this crazy ult that like shot a rocket or
it
something?
It looks like it does it's not fun. It's not fun. And you're constantly like anxiety induced by like for breaking embargo or whatever. Yeah, it's not fun. Here's the craziest shit, okay?
Okay.
You know Heroes Can, right? The video?
Yes,
and
I
had a little bit of a pop-off moment. Because it's just awful. Like,
in comparison to
everything else, it's just garbage, right? And the song is absolutely atrocious. Now, everyone, like, sort of, like, tried to convince me, it's not, you know, used to your, you know, be replayed. It's, like, for a TikTok audience. Of course, that some point also didn't pop off there. Had pretty low views there. Feel like a dud. But, like, the joke is that Heroes Can is basically a children's song, okay?
Yeah.
And then I say, because I, in my, like, I remembered that there was like a fun other children's song where people reimagine how the children's song is sang. And it was like Llama Llama Red Pajama. Okay.
Okay.
So I make the joke in order to get a little bit of a jab in into the content team for like choosing this bad of a song instead of, you know, we're comparing it to Taking Down in for like, taking away, taking away for Valorant Champions or whatnot. You know, like what other developers are doing. It's just like, but yeah, it's the point wasn't about the song. I feel like why not just make it the point?
Yes.
So right, this was running like Heroes Can has a little bit of a different application. It was supposed to run before like ads on Twitch. It's like pre-roll ad. Yeah. It was like shown in cinemas around the North America, from my understanding. So it's a little bit of a different application. Okay, fair. But in my mind, I just look at the numbers. It just failed. Let me quickly. Uh-huh. So I wanted to make a joke that this is like not that fun, so like let's keep with the children's thingy theme, and I pulled out this Llama Llama Red Pajama
like that off the Breakfast Club,
and no, it's like some video station. They have the pretty cool concept where they just like invite artists and they sing or they perform Llama Llama Red Pajama out of a children's book in the way they usually
envision
perform
it to be.
So I chose the Glorilla version and put it out on Twitter and said like, oh, when the next hero hits, just use this one. Bro, when that fucking like llama pajama skin dropped, I was shitting myself. I had no idea that this skin existed, right? But it looked like it was hard leaking under embargo.
Dude,
like, what are the chances of this shit happening to me, man? Like, if they wanted to fight, like... It would just like, but it was actually sincerely into the ether. As I see these leaks come out, I'm like, holy shit! Pull that fucking tweet. Like, I don't want to be accused of anything.
I gotta go back and delete that. Yeah,
I if anyone wants to come, I don't think I had logged in even at that point. But I genuinely didn't know. So like that, I shit myself when that happened.
That's very funny.
So yeah, but yeah, interesting experience for sure. To be there, talk to developers, play the game prior. It was pretty fun.
Yeah. I think those are like really dope ways to kind of make some content. It's you can kind of see the floodgates open. You're seeing like all the I think they also had like a content creator summit not too long ago where they invited a lot of people out. And obviously, I'm sure a lot of those players were, you know, participating in the embargo and the closed environment as well. And yeah, no, I would agree regarding Heroes Can. I thought it was kind of a dud, but it screamed like very much like a pre-roll ad, something that I see on, you know, the Google ad campaigns and stuff. It's just incredibly just simple and boring. And it was just a I don't know why they made it a big deal, because it just wasn't supposed to be. It just, strange. But yeah, Ilari's here. We have a crazy patch. We don't know what it's going to do. And I think maybe people are a little too stunned by Ilari to kind of read the patch notes, because I think there's some hitters in here that people might be sleeping on. So
that's always the problem. Like, Overwatch is like so complex in what you need to consider that like everything in a vacuum is likely to be wrong, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I think we've got some takes that I think are at least sort of measured. So we're gonna talk about Ilari, we're gonna talk about the patch, we're gonna talk about, you know, some dev stuff, because Yiska, you know, talked to the devs and, you know, got some interesting info regarding stuff like Assault being salvageable, maybe not salvageable, we'll have to see. Maybe faster hero production, that'd be sick. If anything to go by, Ilari seems like not the craziest hero ever, but also incredibly fun and like interesting to play. So if that's something that they can kind of capture, then maybe we can get there faster. We'll see. But yeah, no, episode 309. We're going to jump right into it. Thank you to the people who make this show still possible. Those being our patron producers, Battle Crab, Refined Bean, Bronze Bob, Buhel, Picasso, Lulshin, Porkchop Sammy, Rexane, Volumel, and Sugar High, and our YouTube members, Blave Bliss. I'll never not have to try to get that name right. I am DRW. Brother Adamel, Ice Angel, Fire Element, and Fire Element 6, and AK. Not Fire Element 5. That was the clone that got terminated. So, Ilari. Crazy Sun Hero. Cool Railgun, which I am so excited about because that was like the one thing I hope they got right, because that little teaser they had, I was like, yo, that weapon looks fun. The thing looks super sick, and like the entire design is super cool. She pounds. She looks like she does a lot of damage. And did it feel like that when you were kind of playing her? Did she feel like she was like she had agency? She just wasn't like a heal bot?
Yes. Like, I feel like her entire kit is focused around allowing time to do damage. The problem with Lifeweaver that you have is a lot of your time is just spent making room for healing. You got to preload that. You got to hold it. And then also your healing takes some time to get there. It's just like your gameplay loop just revolves way more around healing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, Ilari, like, yes, she does probably doesn't have the theoretical throughput, but because it makes it so that both with her pylon that is super or relatively high sustain, it's like 40 HPS, I think, and then also not 40 HPS just on one target, but the lowest target in range, it just ends up being much more effective than, for instance, something like Zen Orb. You know, like in most situations where it is applicable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect of it. But the right click is also, you don't actually want to overheal. Okay, so if you keep right click up, and it's works sort of like a reverse Zarya beam, I would say.
Okay, sure.
If you keep right click up, it will deplete, and once you run out of all sun energy, I think it's called, then like the bar will fill, but you will not have the chance to reactivate if you depleted it. If you keep a little bit in the tank, then you will have it available the entire time. So you don't want to overhit that threshold. You will also always want to keep a little bit in the tank, right?
So it's almost like a Reinhardt shield where it's like you want to glimpse the edge of it breaking, but if it breaks, then you have to wait for it to fully recharge.
Exactly,
right?
That's yeah. That's the idea around it. That's the skillful usage about not overcharging, not overusing it. Now her right click and her pylon combined is ridiculous HPS in comparison. Like it's like a mini trance basically, right? Like on target in comparison. Because, like, of course, you can just, like, burst down. It's only for a limited amount of time, but it's surprisingly high. The ult charge you get for it is decent. So, like, yes, she won't probably be competing with top heal, I would think. That's another issue I had with the test I ran. Honestly, like, I wasn't in a competitive environment throughout my playtest being from Europe and not hitting these time zones when most people were on, as to like get a representative like performance check as to see where her numbers are, right? Like a lot of this is also theoretical for me. But
I think that's always like a safe bet in our neck of the woods where it's like, We're looking at this from a competitive angle. Like, yeah, she's going to be super fun. She's going to drive a lot of one tricks. This is a complete opposite 180 turn from Lifeweaver, where it was like, this is way too much for the average player base and does too little in theory. Rationally does too little. Theoretically, it can do a whole lot, but in practicality, doesn't do it a lot, whereas Ilari, it's very applicable. People are going to love playing her, and that's awesome, right? But from our neck of the woods, when it comes from a competitive standpoint, Ilari, like the way that you're thinking about it theoretically, I think is always the eventuality of things, right? Where it's like, if this can headshot 3x multiplier, Fielder is going to do that. Twilight is going to do that eventually. Like, these motherfuckers are going to clip you in the head because they put in 12 hours a day.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, so that I don't want you to like lean off of the theoretical too much, because I think that's the point. We'll always get to the theory.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Maybe not huge brow issues, but I would fight you there.
I think also what's important to realize around her is, like, I think a lot of folks look at that kid and think, oh yeah, she's like in the Anna spaces, and that's not true. All her range is just clearly limited, right? Like her her right click heal is Zarya range, I would say, right around.
Pretty sure, yeah.
If you use that as an intuition, that probably helps. The pylon is pretty long range, but not super long range, right?
Sure. It's also fixed. You have to put it somewhere, and your team has to play around it.
Then also you could throw it forward and like have it somewhere. Like I'm thinking Colosseal. Like you can throw it far and then put it like next to the pillar that's still hidden from the enemy, but still in range of your team. Also redeploying is pretty quick. Like if you destroyed yourself and then redeploy, the cooldown is decent. What I will say is there's damage at fall off on your left click. It's just like all of it just contributes to you being in positions that are less safe than the positions that Anna theoretically can be on, right? Therefore, she also gains an escape, right? Like she has verticality in your kit. It's a little, like you think it's not that high, but it is. On that
it's
threshold,
floaty. It's weirdly floaty looking.
It's also like as high as to get you on these high grounds that are just like the norm. You know, like I'm thinking, like the high grounds on push maps, right? Like from the most bases to the top, like to the next level. I would say you will be able to use that and meet that threshold of height in order to get there and get some distance while also pushing back the enemy, right? Yeah. The pushback won't be usable as a very... see environmentals occasionally happen.
Accidentally, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like nearly as applicable as Lucio, of course.
Yeah, or like a coach gun where it's like, this is either a pushback or a jump. Like it kind of falls more into the jump category than a pushback.
Yes, I would say like... You're probably going to see a little bit more environmentals from that one than Pushgun, but definitely less than Lucio.
Okay. Okay.
And I think like in that, the cooldown is also not too short. So you definitely got to work around it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 8 seconds, if I'm not mistaken. So like it just, like she is a really good support. I think she can keep your support buddy alive, but she also will need some help, right? It's a good question because, like, once again, we're thinking about all of this in like a vacuum. But can she, for instance, defend against something like a Tracer? I think very good Ilaris probably can.
Yeah.
The big problem is that, like, her healing power is the only self-sustain, right? You absolutely cannot mismanage that. Like it has 150 HP. It's pretty big. Like taking that out first is theoretically an option, and then it's takes like 10 to 12 seconds, I think, after it's broken to get on it. If it's not broken, then and you break it yourself, like your cooldown is shorter. But that's your only self-sustain, right? Other than the support passive, of course. Right. That's not too much. She doesn't have a self-heal otherwise, other than that healing pylon, right?
Yep.
But still, it kind of heavily outperforms like Anna Nates in the self-sustain way, right? I think like in terms of like surviving... She probably won't have huge issues.
No, not at all. And I think we were wrong regarding Lifeweaver. I think the hitbox issue, if you go back a few, you know, not even a few, quite a few episodes regarding like when Lifeweaver came out, I think we were very much on the at least I was kind of talking about how I thought he was going to be like the hyper flank support to be able to like plug holes, to be able to deal with flankers.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ilari kind of fits that mold a little bit better. Whereas, yes, she doesn't have a lot of self-sustain. She doesn't have a lot of protection, but she offers a lot of offensive potential. And I feel like that's the kind of like ethos with her on top of being just like beautifully simple. Mm-hmm. Right? You don't need to learn a new keyword. You don't need to, you know, hit a crazy skill shot too much. Other than just like being able to, like, you know, better aimers are going to be better Ahlari players because she can headshot, right? Like, that's going to be super impactful. That's fun for people to do. The game, again, is an FPS, first and foremost, at least it should be. And Ahlari drives that direction, right? Another thing to kind of pay attention to, and we were kind of talking about this pre-show, we don't have a flex-ish support that has like an offensive ult. It's been a minute. Like, we have Coalescence, but like, Cole kind of, like, let's not beat around the bush, guys. Coalescence kind of sucks. Coalescence is like, it just got fun to press because now you can actually fade with it and keep it going, right? Being able to like shoot a rocket that AoEs and then marks targets that AoE on top of themselves with Captive Sun, that's like a fight ender. And we don't have that just yet. We have like Nano Boost that can be paired with things to fight end. We have beat engages that can, you know, help you engage, that, you know, help. It's a lubricant, right? To be able to get into a fight. Ahlari, if you hit five people, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
You are creating enough damage by yourself at that point. And then on top of that, everybody else is doing damage as is. So those targets are going to pop and splash all over the place. And she's going to end fights for you. And it's just not something we've had from a support. I don't think if ever, right? Is that,
yeah, not
is that right?
Not from an old perspective. Like, who of the supports?
You could say that, like, Ana hitting a five man nade on, sure, like a weird, yeah, rotation, like, that's a fight ender on a basic ability, which is very strong. That's going to be difficult to get rid of. But there's not too many other ones where it's like, yeah, you hit like a sleep dart that's going to like drastically increase your chances of winning.
Is there an offensive support ult?
No. Other than Coalescence, but even then, Cole, you can use it two different ways, right? Like, you can heal with it, you can damage with it. Obviously, you want to do both, but sometimes you have to choose one.
Mm.
And yeah, that's it, right?
I guess BAP can work in that way.
But there again, it's like you're facilitating. You're not just doing the damage. Right. And in a way, I guess Ahlari still is kind of facilitating, yeah, but it's in a very natural way where it's not like, okay, team, come stand on this corner and shoot through this tiny... It's not tiny, let's face it, but like... It's not jarring. It's just very natural. It's simple. It's beautiful. Like, that's the great part about Ahlari, is it's not insane. There's nothing like changing the dynamics of the game. It's just kind of simple. I don't know. Mm. Does that make sense? I feel like that's going to be like a thing moving forward for her for a long time, at least for me, where it's just like, we need to get back to Ahlari. She feels like a staple hero, kind of like Soldier, kind of like Cassidy, where it's like, we don't need to do anything crazy. If we're going to increase the tempo of the heroes, and we'll get to that in the dev talk, heroes like Ahlari are okay to have. Heroes like Lifeweaver, I'm so glad we have Lifeweaver. I think Lifeweaver is very cool, but we can't have Lifeweaver on a 3-month schedule where we're fighting for attention from Diablo and Baldur's Gate and a new Tarkov wipe and God knows what coming down the road. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, Lifeweaver just doesn't, it's not the grab. It's not the pulling people in. Invasion is great. I don't know if we want to talk about that and like all the content there. Like you said, I think you talked about it. What you're getting in comparison to Overwatch 2. There's a lot of fucking content here.
Mm.
Even if you're a PvP player only, if you're a PvE only player, you finally have something for you now. And it feels like we're starting to get into a direction. It feels like we're getting into a rhythm here. And I think that's really strong. And I don't say that just to kind of like, you know, blow smoke up people's asses. Ahlari feels like a staple hero that we're going to return to if we want to get heroes out faster. Heroes are the driving force for player retention, not maps, not game modes, not skins. It's heroes. Heroes drive this fucking game.
So, okay, here, like, I think this is like, you hit on two developer topics now, and I kind of got to jump into those. So I actually got to ask developers.
Sure.
I just straight up asked, like, what is the biggest content feature that gets the most boys to the yard?
Okay. Is it my milkshake? Because it should be.
And the second thing is, like, was it intentional to stack that much content, right? In Overwatch Invasion. They gave Season 6 the the name Overwatch Invasion instead of saying Season 6. Okay.
Season 6, right. Yeah.
So, okay, let's start with the Overwatch hero development. So, yes, so far. Like, okay, so Jared Noyes framed it in a way as to say they are very different player profiles in Overwatch. And I think that's true. If you think of the archetypical player prototype, you probably think like our Overwatch, you know, the guy that just like is there to make some fun plays,
yeah,
enjoy
fun
those
plays, casual quick play right. player, maybe he'll play rank sometimes, but you know,
yeah, there are folks that are really into the lore of this game. There was a moment where it captured like the cultural gaming zeitgeist, if you would say, right? And then there's like the hardcore FPS player that is really into Overwatch because it's like this smooth experience that delivers something on a technical basis where everyone else just fails because it's not as smooth.
Agreed.
Right?
Yep.
Now, Noyes says like in comparison, like if you took the Venn diagram, like most people will probably get value out of a new hero because that delivers lore and everything, right? So
sure.
If you had to say one thing, it would be heroes. It's not surprising to anyone. Right?
No, it's
now
the understatement of the century.
Now, of course, I just asked, like, okay, if that's the case, why are we not? Is there a possibility to up the cadence? Now, unfortunately, for now, it's not something that they are currently planning to do, but they're talking about it actively. Okay.
Right.
So, is that possible? Right. Keep in mind, Overwatch heroes, not League of Legends heroes, right?
Oh.
Like, you just need a ton of assets here. You need like the game side just seems much more complicated than in comparison to League of Legends.
Sure, sure.
Also, of course,
got to worry about ports and stuff. The lore is obviously, like you said, I totally agree. And this has been a big PvE like argument of mine where it's like, yeah, people really love the idea of the game. People love the story of the game, and if you give them a way to like experience that, that's a whole new experience for people to kind of get into. That's a whole new lane.
Yeah. So while it's not something that they're currently planning, they're actively talking about it. What they said is they're also currently planning what 2024 will look like, right? Mm-hmm. I think the art designer, art director, I'm sorry that I'm forgetting the name, said, like, I'd love to do that. He was laughing, okay? of course, like, very often in development, art is the bottleneck, so...
Yeah.
Like, I felt like the guy that probably has the most problems delivering on a regular basis for, you know, the hit, maybe a seasonal cadence, was having a little bit of fun there. It would be cool, right? If I had to guess, like, it's probably actually an internal discussion right now, if that's possible. They're looking at the data, if that's actually something that, because you would have to reallocate resources in order to make that. Those windows, these seasonal cadences. I think they're probably just internally discussing. They just didn't have anything to report at this time. Okay.
Sure, of course.
Now, in terms of this being one of the biggest content drops, if not the biggest content drop, what you actually said is almost like exactly the justification they gave, which is they are currently trying to break through the noise of the industry cycle and trying to find out what kind of content releases achieves that, right?
Mm-hmm.
How can you create a moment in the gaming industry? And they are looking to collect feedback by that. Now, of course, if you look at the marketing cycle here, right?
So
this is a ton of production going in, and with it comes a ton of marketing dollars, right?
Yeah,
we had Heroes Ken. We have,
and we have John Cena. Yes, just say what you want to say. We have fucking John Cena. Okay.
Yeah, like they, but they said they don't have a lot riding on this. They don't feel anxiety around performing here. They just really want to see how it works. I'm not sure if I'm 100% buying this. It feels like a pretty big moment for them. I think my read is here is they probably demonstrated with those story missions why PvE didn't have a future. Like, it's fun.
You think so?
It's fun, not a future in terms of the the core game mode that they had to scrap.
Yes, of course. I mean, right. I refer back to like the episode with Avril. I think the scope of the idea that the original developers had just never made feasible sense. I think there is, however, and maybe this is a clarification question, I do think there is a lane for PvE, though.
There's a lane for PvE. There's a lane for the story missions that we're getting.
Yeah, yeah.
So the coolest part about these story missions is you get like a Blizzard quality. All right, had a fun blue screen there. So I think I was stuck at the content volume of this entire season. Elevator explanation basically is this is a trial run. They are very much in a trial and error mode. They are trying to, you know, be much more receptive to what the community gives them. I think this is an interesting model. I think very often when developers try to listen more to their community and communicate more, it's a problem of trying to filter what the loud minority from the majority of the game thinks or wants, right?
Okay.
But I also think we for a long time had the problem of listening too much to focus groups and whatnot, and
yes,
having opinions of people that were probably fairly out of touch with what folks actually want, and that's above the pay grade, right? Is to say, okay, this is going to happen in the future and whatnot, right? So I'm fairly positive on that system. I think one thing I will say about the entire developer Q&A, from my point of view, I feel like Jared Noyes, the executive producer, is a refreshing lead developer to have in that position. Okay. One thing that I will say is he seems very eager to jump on grenades when they are asked, meaning he won't shy away from giving an answer. He seems to be sort of like a less bullshit guy. I think a lot of what happened in terms of like the making rational cuts to what the kind of content product you want to put out, ironically happened after this guy got on. I think it right around September 2022, I think he was brought on.
I mean, was he not the one who basically had to, you know, you want to talk about jumping on a grenade? Was he not the one? Was he not the developer that was introduced to the community by saying, yeah, PvE is dead?
I'm not sure if he was introduced that way, but like, yes, he was okay, one of fair. The people definitely there.
Yeah, it was to... like him and Keller, right?
Right. Yeah. And yeah, it's just a refreshing voice. Mm-hmm. I think from what I believe to be getting it is, he's the closest of the developers.
Sure.
And that's like the longer I am here, and that's also true for esports, the more I believe it's about great teams, right? Great teams make great products.
Yep.
And to up the quality, also going forward into the position of, you know, Microsoft restaffing the office, whatnot.
Sure.
It is all about like getting the right people into the right positions for them to, you know, get a salient idea of where this product should be heading, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, a lot of what we're still getting is still, you know, years of planning from a different studio head. And while you can't scrap everything, they are probably doing their best in order to, you know, polish this.
Sure.
Put something out like the story missions that by all rights are not a premium product. Right, in terms of like what gaming...
Not by themselves, no.
Right.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. I think they also realized that in the pricing they put out for it. It admittedly is not a lot of content either. I slightly disagree about the replayability of it. I think there is some value in playing these missions two or three times. But everything else beyond that is probably too much. Just for folks who would like to achievement hunt or want an experience that's slightly different with their friends, I could see that. But at some point, you just played every hero at all kinds of different difficulties. Yeah. The Torbjörn mission is probably the one that has the most replayability for me. Everything else, yeah, it's a limited. To be fair, I also didn't get to play Underground. So, and that's, of course, outside the paid PvE missions. So,
sure.
Basically, they stack content in order to see what resonates the most. And if this is the volume that can be expected or should be expected in order to breach the new cycle and get something going, create a moment for this game, should there be marketing dollars behind it? That's not something they said out loud, but that's something that I'm inferring, the last part about the marketing. Personally, John Cena being there, did that help? I'm not sure. I still think this is very much out of touch, and like taking that money and like taking the licensing money from the Hero Scan thing and just doing dope media with that in some form is probably always going to outperform. But once again, that's built on great teams, and that's unfortunately they are behind in to the industry leaders in comparison to that, right?
Would agree.
So yes, like it's a right direction. It's just also something where it's like it's there are no hockey stick growth elements inside for me. Okay.
Okay.
This is going to be painfully linear until I think like this game probably is being done hard by its public sentiment as I gouge it. If you read the comments under Hero Scan, it's like atrocious. And that's all very often the case. Public discourse lacks behind actual value in practically every part of, like, I don't know. It's like this Van Gogh situation where, like, a motherfucker has to die before they get their laurels. Yes. Okay? Like, it's that delayed at sometimes, right? So, and sometimes we only realize that there's value when they're gone or when it's gone.
Yes, there is like value, especially in artistry, when you know that their catalog is finite and it is locked. I do think there is something, and I can't remember my train of thought, to be completely honest with you. I will say the one thing I did want to add was like on the making a moment perspective. I think the beautiful thing that like Riot does really well is they've found a formula that works for them that also integrates the esport, right? So they're creating these songs, they're collaborating with like more entrenched younger artists or up and coming artists that are bigger on social media to kind of create content for their esport that isn't just like, hi, I'm faceless TikToker number 7, and I love Valorant champions. You know what I mean? Like, it's not completely faceless and flat and vapid. It provides something of value on their own. It exposes people that wouldn't necessarily be exposed otherwise. And it's cool for them. I don't know that anybody is necessarily, like, jazzed that John Cena is playing general number 12 and telling us that the Omnix are coming. We should be terrified. You know what I mean? Like it's just a little silly. So I would definitely echo the point regarding like just it still just being very out of touch regarding like trying to hit that viral moment. The one thing that they did do right, and maybe by accident, well, not necessarily by accident, but maybe to their surprise, is that everything regarding leading up to like that John Cena moment, like reveal with like all the Twitch streamers having like the little glitch in the system or whatever. What's the first thing everybody always thinks of? It's the Sombra, like, little puzzle that they put out, right? Like, that was, a very cool viral moment, and I feel like we have these, specifically within this game, we have these little, like, puzzle pieces that, like, Blizzard kind of, like, lays around all the time that people take and run with it, and you can't control when it becomes a moment, but there is, like, this mystery to the game that people like to kind of solve. just A, cheaper, and B, like way more successful to the actual audience of the game and not some sort of like outreach program, because that's what these always feel like, is like, guys, we have DJ Khaled. We've got John Cena in our game. Isn't that so cool? Terry Crews wants to voice Doomfist. Isn't that so cool? Don't you just want to come play Overwatch? It's like, you're not talking to anybody. That's not getting, like you said, it's not cutting through the noise of the industry. What is are the like actual campaigns in the game that play with the mystery of the game and add little nuances and create moments for the players that either media companies pick up on, or players create video, or content creators create videos on, and, you know, try to solve. Like, it's not lost on me, and I think there is something to like the Sombra ARG. It doesn't have to be an ARG. It's not for everybody. But there is something with the in-game performance of it all that I think, even in some ways, it kind of comes down to like the voice interactions. I know that that's kind of like also in like the same kind of lane as like the story elements and the PvE elements, that like has its own kind of fandom that like people love to find the interactions between the heroes. So maybe something there. Yeah, just quit with the outreach. If we're trying to make moments, use the game. Let the game kind of like be the moment. Don't try to polish a turd in some ways. You know what I mean?
I don't need the game to be a moment, to be honest. Like, it could just be outside media. I think that's probably more... Like, honestly, like, taking away is way more, like, promotive than anything you could probably do in-game. You just got to think bigger. You just got to think outside the box. You don't have to, just copy-paste this idea, but, like, you got to think a little bit outside the box and find ways to promote this thing. And I think something like this is probably coming. I'm not sure if it will be of any quality. That's always the problem, right? Like, you gotta hit the quality. But yeah, I'm just like, it's unfortunately the case that if you're used to industry leader quality, then you gotta be patient with this one. There's a lot of
time to grow.
There's a lot of like, there's this concept of tech debt in software. Uh-huh. Put that into people's management, right? Like, into whoever pulls the strings, what kind of ideas have they put into the game? And it's not that they are necessarily still here. It's that the rails they laid for this game are still the one the train has to necessarily run on, while, you know, they make mild adjustments to the course, and only eventually will they be able to take full charge of where this is heading, right? Great. Development is just like planning so far ahead. And it's unfortunately the case that, like, I don't know, like, it's like, for the same reason you don't say like a president is necessarily responsible what happens in the markets in the first year of their tenure, right? Other than maybe like the markets thinking, oh, that guy's going to be all PayPal based. Because their policy could have obviously not been, you know, put through legislation and like...
Right.
And taken full effect. It's pretty much the same thing here, right? Like, there's the impact of new leadership will be felt differently. And once again, like, there's still a leadership change or adjustment or
incoming.
Maybe not even leadership, but like the type of direction or the ideas behind this, right? What you want to do with this IP. They are still very much in flux, it feels like. And I will say, the discourse with the lead developers was a positive experience for me.
That's good. Because if I know you, I'd like to think I do. developers probably irk you more than they
look. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie on with talking about some stuff with them that is more
sure.
relevant.
There's
to
always
going to
be
like,
agreed.
For instance, like how they think. How they think Flashpoint will be played at different levels of the skill distribution was a question. Okay, it's probably something that blows the scope of such a Q&A.
Yeah.
I still was not convinced by that
you
answer.
You didn't feel adequate or like...
No, I think
you
like...
You didn't feel appetized.
Theoretically, like this, I'm a little concerned for Overwatch League and Flashpoint. Maybe we won't get to the level of sophistication this year in terms of like because you don't have that much time with Flashpoint and we won't understand the fundamental concepts, but I'm really scared what random spawns mean because the architecture of those random spawns could hard force like okay think of how Gibraltar how different Gibraltar plays to like and Arctica, right?
Okay.
In terms of like what kind of comps you can play there, just by the map architecture. Now put that all in one map, and whatever comp you can play is random.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and they, to their credit, they said like they checked the sidelines and that everything is symmetrical and like, the problem is like, if you run onto point one, and then. The one team loses, and then there's a re-engagement, and there's probably, on average, will be three fights, I would say, per point. Sure. And then eventually the transition comes, but you're sitting there with either your old comp that's inadequate for... Like, it's not impossible that you could have such bad RNG, and the meta could be this bad, this, like, hyper-specified two locations... That the team that wins the first point or first fight
snowballs
or loses harder, right? Because they never get into
they never get ults because they have to go swap.
Right. And it just like sort of forces this hard parity because, or maybe they need to find ways to re-engage, just leave one on the point that keeps it. Or I don't know, like there's some weird shit that could theoretically happen. It's super hard to see where the Nash equilibrium for this map lies. The communicated situations that will like you will be caught up out of position like between.
It was
points.
The same stuff with push. Bro, we talk about
no
this. It's the same talking point.
Motherfucker is doing that shit in a pro play. Okay, like nobody running from spawn is necessary. Like in which mode does that happen? Who's dumb enough beyond diamond to look into obvious. Sidelines. That's just not happening, right? And of course they're not necessarily developing for that type. But I think that like that the top 20% should still be considered in the development. And also it's by the way, like just a sound bite I heard from this weekend I was at IAM Cologne. Jens Hilges, who is the founder of the biggest VC fund in esports, Bitcraft, it's called. And he had a number. I'm not sure what matrix that would be derived. I'm just like uncritically giving you that number. So take it with a grain of salt. But he says it's reasonable to assume that 30 to 50% of all players that play League of Legends are there because of esport. Okay? It's a massive marketing deal.
Sure.
If that is true, and if esports can have that power for your product, and you want this to be a thing going forward, as, by the way, this also, they once again reiterated, a competitive scene is one of the core values of this game. Of course, like having something like, you know, two tournaments a year, or like only the World Cup running and say that we have an esport. Yeah. Technically you do.
You don't really.
Like, if that marketing power is there and there's this much money to be made, then you got to cater to that audience as well. And Riot do, and they just, like, win that way, right?
The way that Riot does, I think, is really, and I think it took them a long time to get there, but they've actively tried to, is they integrate it with just good content, you know, regarding like the idea of making the viral moment that we just kind of talked about. You know, they're integrating the esport into they integrate the esport into the actual like marketing campaign around. It's not the marketing campaign around the game necessarily, but it's content created for the game about the game that has to do and is facilitated by the esport as well. Mm. So it's very interconnected, and yes. I feel like a lot of the content that Overwatch makes, like that orbits the game itself, has a hard time kind of connecting, not with necessarily with the audience, because that is difficult to do, I think, a lot of the time, and it takes time to get there. But it doesn't necessarily can everything feels so. Like, even the way that we talk about it, where it's like lanes, where it's like, oh, this is the PvE lane, and this is the competitive lane, and this is the esports lane. It's like everything is so separated, and it's just been a problem I think we've always struggled with since the dawn of time with Overwatch, regarding like even the Reddits. Everything is just so separated and so combative.
Yes, but that's you also know? By negligence or by design. Okay,
sure. So it's hard to tell which at this point.
There's something to be said about, okay, we realize PvE is not going to be this entity that walks hand in hand with PvP anymore.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
we're not going to, for instance, have another PvE drop this year. That's already publicly confirmed, right?
Sure.
So this is not going to be this other cornerstone for this game. This is now firmly a PvP game first. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
So, a PvP game first could definitely benefit from the esports marketing. But yeah. What you got to do in order to facilitate an esports base is to feed the funnel and build the funnel out. And what this game does terribly is to create status ladders to climb. Okay, the rank system is there. But status to show off in a way that everyone who plays your game is aware of it. Right?
Yep.
We've said it many times on this podcast that there's no way to flex your top 500 position other than to like the other 9 people in your game that are also probably top 500 in prior years. Right, yep. There's no prestige to this position. You should be able to show that off somewhere, right?
You have to be able to play to the vanity of people.
What the fuck is a spray? Like, the problem
no
is
no gun
like,
charms, no sprays. People, it has to be something flashy.
If you encounter these guys like outside ranked mode, which is the only way you will ever encounter, like you will ever have the crossover of a top 500 player with, like, you know, a gold player.
Sure.
In, like, a custom game or whatever. You think they would even recognize the status items that we've given to the top 500 players? Oh. No. Why not? Make it pog. Make it, like, really flashy. Make it, like, oh, where'd you get that from? Oh, I was top 500. Oh, base.
Yep.
That's the shit that got us all, like, to care in World of Warcraft with the...
Yep.
With the mounts and whatnot, right? Like, everyone was already like doing their own jumping puzzles in Orgrimmar or fucking Stormwind. There's a guy on his on his mount. It's like, whoa, what's that dragon? Where you got that from? Well, it's for getting Arena Gladiator, right? It's the Gladiator mount.
Yeah,
those type of status ladders need to happen. Maybe you need to also open it up to. In ways where you add additional stakes, additional recognition into this, right?
Yeah.
Either like let someone like Face It do it and put a prize pool behind it. If you don't want to have them outside the system, create new status ladders in order to feed that funnel. And as people care about their ranked or their rank, and they see the carrot at the end of the tunnel, everyone else gets more enticed. It becomes more meaningful in the system. And these funnels just need to be created for this game. We're really bad at this. It actually felt like they were actively working against it for the longest time. They didn't want to have these. The only thing that we had for a while that sort of kind of like signaled status is like the Golden Guns. They hated, yeah. Or Jeff Kaplan said he hated that. He should have never done that. Trash opinion, by the way.
Yeah, terrible opinion.
But it also didn't really signal status, because the only way to for it to signal status is if you saw someone like switch to like seven heroes in the very early seasons, where they could have only accrued it by being like very good, therefore getting a lot of currency here, right?
Right.
This like basically means nothing anymore. Everyone has every golden gun that they want for their hero anyway. So it's really just like I played a lot, and this is covered by the hero progression, right? Now that we also have these hero progression stuff, and people might actually look at your profile, customize the profile, right?
Yeah.
Get rid of private profiles and give people like a space. Make it something like people want to look at, and then put these status labels here, right? You're never going to have these social environments where it is like Orgrimma or Stormwind, where it will matter. But you got to create spaces and put something behind it, and then put the status signals in there, right? In order to increase the pull upwards. Had that happened, right, we would have it be acceptable to post esports content on our Overwatch. It's fucking dead right now, because there's nothing that fosters that interest. We would have way more sustainable viewership in that, right? Yeah. I think like this is something that will need to be rediscovered if they actually really think this is now a core PvP experience. With a core PvP experience, there comes competitiveness. And with competitiveness, there comes esports, right?
Yep.
This has to now, like, it is kind of ironic that in the dying death rattle sounds of the Overwatch League, the illumination of this moment came sort of like last year, probably for them a little bit earlier, where they said, okay, like PvE can't be that much of a focus anymore. And at that point, like, unfortunately, we will only feel that down the line. Also, like, the thing is, like, a lot of pipelines right now in terms of free to play, in terms of Steam, in terms of PvP being prioritized once again, in terms of development cycles, maybe pointing towards also more stuff that PvP players want, like more heroes. Once again, not confirmed, but something they're thinking about. That these pipelines now are pointing towards a direction where in 3-4 years' time, there could be a successful esport. That shit should have happened like from 2016 onward, and we'd be in a very different position if that was true, right?
I think the company would be in an entirely different position, because I'd even challenge you to go even farther, where it's like, you want to talk about, you know, more pipelines opening up, where it's like, we're seeing company-wide communication being embraced. We're seeing company-wide agility in it when it comes to development being embraced. When it comes to, like, you know, the Diablo patch being just received in the most negative light possible, rightly so, and having a direct communication feed with these, like, campfire chats and stuff we've had in the past with an Overwatch that seemed to be coming back into fruition with, like, Mr. X talking to, like, some of the developers, kind of teasing out and, you know, making... driving a vehicle for people to kind of like experience or at least hear about some of these bigger drops. They're I agree so much that Activision Blizzard is getting there. It's just a shame that it's taken this long, right? And there's still a lot of room to grow. Like you said, I really like the idea that you're talking about almost like a Steam profile. It's not something that I'm super big into, but I would imagine that people love that idea. I think there is a sense of vanity there, and I think they have a lot of cool systems to play with. I think they just have to be okay with experimenting with it, where it's like, okay, you brought the on fire system back. Why does it have to be on fire? Why not, for like the top 500 players, give them like an on fire skin? Now they're on ice or on electricity or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, just adding elements that like are so different, where it's everybody's used to it being on fire, everybody's used to the normal skins. You know, that was the cool part about like the weapon skins with the golden guns, is that like everybody's used to, and then you see a golden gun, you're like, oh dang, like they must have put a lot of time on the hero, right? Like, you can flex that way. There's plenty of ways to do it. Blizzard has to just be willing to just let players get a reward. You know what I mean? And that was something that I kind of wanted to jump into with even the PvE, where it's like, you're talking about replayability. Easiest way to get people to replay it, give them a carrot on a stick. Give them something to work towards. Give them like, okay, you want to complete the hardest difficulty with a full party with these heroes, like the challenge mode? Here's a skin. It's really cool. You can only get it through this way. Go for it. Give them something to work for, and players will do it. Wholeheartedly, they'll do it.
Let's do a quick comparison, okay? So, look at Eric's profile, okay? You will see, like, Eric has a crippling Overwatch addiction. That's the first thing you will notice. But also, like, if you look at the things that the game will show you in-game, especially if you, like, was to opt to a private profile, you would see the top 500 icon. Eric says the top 500 icon is from 6v6 deathmatch. You now got the same status signal as a dude getting it in 5v5 on the rank ladder, right? Like, basically, Eric has the same status for the game as proper, okay?
Yeah.
The icon, like the level, will tell you he played a lot, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Probably, like, playing a lot, probably a good player then, right? Like, we'll showcase that. Of course, there's also the hours. I don't think there's a max SR ever that you could see or is readily accessible to folks, right? Now we're getting like the increased hero progression system. There's some value there. You will get some specialization information about like what this guy is good at. It's interesting to see in terms of like the team formation and how you want to maybe structure your strategy. That could add utility there. But in terms of like status, it's just like how many hours did you drop into this thing, right? It's nothing like that really tells you deeply about the skill level. Really, like 5% of this screen is like, this is your top SR combined. Okay. And that is just like really not sufficient, especially if you can just hide it behind. Like everyone has block profiles anyway, because nobody wants to, you know, in the flame war, in the status signal war, why would I show it, right? Like, and nobody's really showing it off. In some ways, the status signal is being able to have a non-private profile because you have your own inner security to be fine, to be shit at video games and signal as much as to others, right?
I think that's a really elegant way to kind of both unlock the utility that a profile like that brings, even though it's more often used to flame. But to combat that, or to at least balance it, to be able to like glorify it and make it like a vanity symbol and make it a homepage for you and being able to decorate it and add things and add achievements. And from those achievements, you can change all kinds of stuff about it. I think that that is something that would be interesting. It's not something that like, I don't know that competitive players would be super interested in interacting with as like a vehicle, but if you made it so much so, like if you gave them a reason to, where you get really interesting animated skins, or you can kind of like you're saying flex your skins max rank.
Thing. Yes,
yeah, I think that's the easiest way moving forward. And
more gun again,
jumps. Yeah, it has to be.
Actually, gun jumps I like more because you can apply to everything single one. You can just customize them to every season. Only top 500 gets them. The top 10 or top 1. Of that position of the respective queue will get the special one, and like they keep it forever.
Base, but is that necessary? Is that enough of a flex? I would argue it's more for you.
It's just
for you.
Everyone sees your death thing, right? As well on streams and whatnot.
They see the player of the game. I suppose I would want something more.
Is it like there's no, like, as far as I know, there's no real like, dude. The last 24 hours, it was always nasty. And let's be honest, like, it probably wasn't the best guy, right? Like, it was always rank tanking, and like, there was some mild win trading going on for number one. If you can shut that shit down and make it really serious, like, it's just a dope achievement to be the guy that gets it into your respective.
Oh, I agree. Right? Yeah. I think rank one is definitely like a fun kind of personal goal that people can set for themselves, but I think, and I think you'd agree, there are other developers, there are other esports that celebrate that way more. Obviously Riot is like the easiest like go-to example, where in the past they're paying, they're like giving people like bomber jackets if you hit like a certain rank. They're letting you know in the in-game client when the new season comes out who was rank one last season, and it tells it to everybody. Like, everybody knows that fucking Dickbutt 449 was rank one NA solo queue. You know what I mean? Like, that just is screamed at you when you log in for the first time that season. Like, that's really cool to see.
Yeah.
That's something that you can feel super proud of. That's something that you can work for to flex on people, to say, like, bang, I did it. I'm in the client. Like, that's insane, right? So there's endless ways for them to facilitate having a carrot on a stick. They just have to do it.
It's actually nuts. Like, you know how much more good you could do if you, like, for the game, for the money that you spend on like John Cena or whatever.
Yes.
Or like, yes. Even if you say esports budget, right? Because essentially, yeah, like it markets esports, and esports markets you then. So take it out of the DJ Khaled pot,
true,
if you want.
Get off Snapchat.
But, like, yeah. I don't know. Like, anything. Like, any... Have a statue that,
I mean,
you,
yeah,
share
they just
with those
did
guys.
This,
right?
Yeah, they just did this in Diablo, where, Diablo, like, the top, like, 1,000 hardcore players to hit, like, max rank or whatever, like, they were immortalized. And that's really cool. That's a moment. That's something that people... Outside of even like the Diablo sphere, I'm listening to podcasts with content creators that are in like the normie sector of like the internet. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, I'm going for the hardcore title in Diablo. And it's like, that's piercing the veil of just normal society. And people are hearing about this that wouldn't normally hear about it. And that drives really cool engagement. And it sounds so general, but like, that's the idea. What's not doing that is DJ Khaled, John Cena, let's be honest, having paid actors come to our events at the Blizzard Arena and going, yes, I do love esports and the gladiators. Who doesn't love hydration? Am I right, guys? Like, nobody, that doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and I get it's scary.
Cool shit.
It's scary to have anything that commits more. Like, for instance, yes, let's say you would name part a room in your office after like the rank one player, and then that motherfucker milkshake,
sure,
ducks
of course,
5 seconds later. It's like, it sucks being 2023, okay?
Yes.
I get it. Like, like Sinatra skin doesn't feel great right now, right? Does it?
Yeah, I get it.
I get it from that point of view, especially because you have even less vetting. So you probably can't do the really cool shit, like getting someone like a star or something on a fucking,
sure, yeah, you can do a boardwalk. Yeah.
just like, but you can be super creative in the things that you can theoretically do, right? And give people recognition for that. That shit, like, it's probably way less than the fucking money that,
yes,
any of those motherfuckers activation got. But it would go such a long way. And keep in mind, you don't have to even spend money. You just have to create like a cool moment and be creative with that. Maybe you can even put it somewhere virtually. Like, give someone like a map, sure, location. You know how we gave like like Internet Talk, like a little thing on King's Row, right?
We should have done that. And this was stuff that like if any hardcore listener wants to go back and listen to the episode that we accidentally got Arnold on from Gen G.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of says as much, and I'll forever echo that point, that we should create content for the game, and it naturally integrates the esport by creating these little moments. And the production team for the Overwatch League has already been doing this subtly with like their pause menus, where they're nodding towards the big plays that we all remember, the iconic plays with like the pause menus, where like there's a very specific hero standing very cinematically in this one particular area. And it's a nod. It's a very subtle, but it's a nod towards like these big plays. Why not create content around that being more generally palatable for the average player base, having a nod to the esport, creating that content? It doesn't have to be long. It could be super short form. But it integrates it that way. You know, I'll forever think that that's like a super, super dope idea. There's just so much to even like postulate on, whether it be, because I don't know that many other esports even have like a Hall of Fame. Like,
Mm. Yeah, why not have like a Hall of Fame?
Don't like the problem is like that has too much sports stench. I want to get away from.
Okay,
Don't want anyone to engage the part of their brain where they think this shit is sport. It just leads to shitty.
Okay, I get the sensitivity. I get it.
Oh, it is the most detrimental shit about all of this. Like that we thought in these ways and thought we could copy paste instead of like looking at what works in esports. So once again, like we can just pool our creative juices and come up with cool suggestions on how to. Dude, you know what it cost me to name the Flatter deadlift? Fucking $0.
$0.
The calories I burned writing that shit. And this guy, for whatever he did. It's not even like he won anything. It very much the opposite. This guy has now a stat immortalized after him, right?
Yep.
It doesn't take anything, right?
Oh, you just have to commit to it.
You
have to commit to the bit.
Yeah. You got to commit to the pitch. You got to create a moment people can emotionally get involved in, can understand the story there. You got to pay for storytellers to do that shit for you, okay? That's where you got to invest in. Get some like quality storytellers into your esport or game in terms of cultural storytellers, like the story that is told by your players, not your game itself. Okay.
Yeah.
And like immortalize them in some sense, right? And if that happens, like esports, like if that's not in your game, you don't have an esport. Okay, you're not an esports game. You're a game with an esport. You're not an esports game.
Agreed.
CS is an esports game because these guys sit down with those players. They put like cool moments of them. And by the way, it's a smart decision to not name them, but just have the symbol for that moment they created there. I'm thinking like, you know, the simple like up flying up thing.
Sure.
To have these things there and immortalize them that way. And it, by the way, double cool. I think Simple has a tattoo of that on his arm, right? Like
we have tattoos in Overwatch, by the way. If any real ones remember, there are some pretty memorable Overwatch tattoos that people have, just saying.
Right, yeah. I know which one you mean.
If you know, you know, you know, just, you know, giving it up.
Yeah. Yep. But... Yeah, I think that's how you like. As soon as we sort of like aim towards those, having the player, especially the top players, be involved in the story that your game tells, doesn't have to like you don't. I don't want to see them in the Torbjorn mission. That's not what I'm talking about. Slight nods. Some recognition, something maybe that happens in the real world where there's recognition for it, right?
Yeah.
And that can create funnels where kids can once again dream to be on top of the leaderboards here, right?
Yeah. They can really become Crusher 99, not a player for the Los Angeles Gladiators. That's the big thing when we're talking about like changes for Overwatch and how it relates to esports. That's the first thing that has to change with whatever the fuck comes next. It can't be about the brands. It has to be about the individuals because that's how esports is consumed still. No brand is bigger than Simple. No brand is bigger than Faker. It has to be about the players.
It is still an insane proposition to say, like, we want to create an esports that is celebrated by people that don't play our game. That's so insane. You're so, so wrong. Like...
I'll forever give them some slack because it did court people who did seem like they were interested in spending money, but it just was still such a complete, everything else about it was just so mishandled and wrong.
The problem is like, then you just have the homer that doesn't understand anything about the game, just looks at the life bars and talks at his team.
I know.
And then pay picks. And, like, how many people are there that are like this? Especially in this demographic. I'm sorry, not many.
I agree. It does feel like very whale format-y where you're just trying to like hyper tune in to like a very particular person and just try to market to them. which just isn't esports, to be fair. And it never was going to work. It was an interesting kind of thought that wasn't even, I guarantee you, it had nothing to do with what they originally wanted to do. It was just an accidental outcome that I think could have been an interesting experimental point. But yeah, no, that this is not me defending the initial concept of the Overwatch League. I have 309 episodes of me shitting on it, so trust and believe. Yeah. This is not a defense. It's more of like a, huh, interesting. Yeah, whatever comes next, it has to be about the players. It has to be about immortalizing people. Is that, if we're talking about integration, if we're talking about entanglement from the esport to the game, to the content, to the stuff around it, is the easiest way to do it. There's a reason why people know about and still remember Jonak, because he was the first skin that was created, right? That's the stuff that like people latch onto. That's the story that like the esports shaman in your normie friend group can kind of like pass along. It's like, oh, I think he was like a player who like played Zen a lot and it was like really good. Yeah. And like da 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 da. And that's going to get that will make somebody at least remotely interested, if not make somebody super interested in like figuring out who that was, getting into the history of things. That brings them into the restaurant, to utilize the analogy that I kind of equip every once in a while, right? Like that's the entryway in, and we have to get back to that. We have to get back to esports in that way, because we have lived in a pocket dimension of just t-sportsdom for way too long. It has to get back to home. It has to get back to a lot of different things. And that's the easiest way to get like shit back online. I'd argue.
Yeah. Want to do patch notes?
Yes. I think a quick dev retrospect, though, to kind of echo your point previously, things are slowly getting better with the agility, with the at least talking point. There is a table discussion from Team 4 that Heroes could be maybe coming out faster in the future. Obviously, it's not on the table right now, but it's stuff they're talking about, they're thinking about. Content, there's more lanes to consume Overwatch, there's more content for Overwatch than ever before. It is a weirdly good time for Overwatch. Sadly, it is a very bad time for Overwatch esports as we transition into the Microsoft acquisition.
Yep.
The basically death of Overwatch League, because I don't think you just kill an entire, you know, StatsLab dying is a very real wake-up call to anybody who's been coping real hard that like, oh no, it'll come back, don't worry guys, like, yeah, doors are being shut guys, it's not looking great. But there's a very interesting future that lies ahead of us, and it's looking like it's stemming from a game that is finally getting it, or at least it's closer to getting it. Mm-hmm. Is what it kind of feels like from the developer side. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think also very often, like, there are limitations to systems where you probably don't have to think very hard why they can't be implemented readily.
Sure.
So, for instance, like, one of the other articles I wrote is about us not getting a web map voting or selection system.
Mm-hmm.
Makes perfect sense. If we're currently already having issue with some issues with map with matchmaking, right?
Yeah.
Imagine separating player bases even more and having less of a selection that could be more ideal towards matchmaking and, you know, making ideal teams that have fun matches against each other if right. You separated it throughout all the different game modes and maps, right? Like in a game like CS, it has way less maps, but also, yes, that's absolutely true. Like if you queue only like an obscure shit map in the middle of the night, you can absolutely grind to global there, and you like your rank will absolutely be inflated over your actual ability, right?
Yep.
So because you are just like stomping, like have massive mismatches of skill on those maps, right? Yep. Like either you get hyper stomped or you hyper stomp. So it actually isn't the right moment for this. And there are other good reasons that I also wrote about in this article about like the core fundamental design of what Overwatch is. Sure. It's not in the cards right now. It just doesn't make sense. As much as I want to just like not play a certain certain number of games.
I don't want to play Paris. You know, there are some dead maps that nobody wants to play, and it would give feedback, I think very real feedback to the developers of like what is working and what isn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think that, to be fair, I think there can be dissonance from this front when it comes to the casual, you know, gaming fan to the esports consumer, where you can have pro play that does have map vetoes, map bans, because that enhances that product. And it is, that is a dissonance that I think we can just take the bullet for, because it creates a better product overall. Sure. So like, yeah, don't, no, I think that that's something that I don't want to hear people kind of like attack, where it's like, oh, the devs want a streamlined experience. And they said that map vetoes can happen, so it can't happen in pro play. It's like, no, it can. We just have to be okay with a little bit of dissonance and not a completely streamlined.
It would still be so much variety. Like, I don't want to hear it. Like, it's not an overtly limiting factor for Overwatch esports as all.
Yeah.
In its appeal. And then, by the way, in terms of like not creating fun game modes, they also took out Assault, and there Aaron Keller went a little bit more into detail. We got a rough idea why Assault had to be cut. I wrote about like them adding a little bit more context why it was ultimately just like a time sink, unsalvageable, not fun to the vast majority of player base. Cut your losses, development, new game modes is basically the gist of it, right? I agree with that decision as well. Like, if you actually have hard data that people hate playing Assault.
Shocking.
Once again, like, I hated playing Assault much more than I hated watching it in Overwatch League. Actually, I kind of liked Assault.
Was super interesting. It was a very difficult problem for pros to solve, so it genuinely came, the solutions that people came up with sometimes were like really, really interesting. Hanamura, I think Anubis came up with some like very interesting strategies going back to like season one of Overwatch League. Doc, I'm talking to you. OG Shock fans will know, like, the Doc play of him skating around and trying to boot people off high ground. Like, there were set plays, and that was really cool to see. But you want to talk about dissonance between viewing the game and that experience versus playing it in a hyper team oriented game mode that's already in a team oriented base, like home game. Like, it was a nightmare to play. Like, it genuinely was not fun.
Yeah.
And I say that very sparingly sometimes because it is subjective, but that one I think is just very obviously like just this not the case. And it's kind of surprising that they feel different about push, but we'll see. We'll also see about Flashpoint. It feels pretty open. It feels similar enough to Control. We'll have to see how what the community sentiment grows with on that front. But I think I think you kind of said it was like a overall positive experience talking to the devs, right?
Yeah. No, for sure.
All right. Well, getting into what the devs actually did, because Ilari isn't the only thing that is coming. We have quite a few buffs, and we'll kind of get through some of the notes here. There is quite a few changes, most of which don't feel super pressing, but I think there are some gems in here that are sneakily good. I don't think we're necessarily going to get into the meta discussion as it pertains to today. I think we have to chew on it a little bit more. But kind of starting us off, I think the D.Va timing is kind of interesting on like baby D.Va now getting a little bit of a invulnerability frames, if you will. It kind of feels like, is that safe to say?
Mm-hmm.
Was that something you experienced kind of playtesting Ilari, or is that?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think D.Va's changes necessarily are anything necessarily chew on. I think the cooldown of boosters being slightly, you know, quicker, it's not anything crazy. Doomfist and Orisa both having, or Doomfist and, or I'm sorry, Orisa and Ramattra having ways to kind of limit. I feel like this is basically just targeting Tracer, Pulse Bomb attachment damage, I think, is kind of interesting.
I mean, the attachment stuff sounds like that could also just be Ilari's ult as well, right? Like, That could come true.
Yeah, yeah, that could. That I mean, the timing there does make a lot of sense, and with her alt being like a marked system. Mm. Also, I don't think that the more that I see our, you know, Discord kind of popping off about this, the more that I think it is needed to be reiterated that the alt itself marks, and that mark when it is triggered explodes.
Right.
And that can chain. Right. Like that is the kind of the subtlety of the ultimate that makes it really, really strong is that it pops. And that damage is what's, you know, when we talk about game enders or fight enders, that's what's really ending those fights, not necessarily just like hitting the ult.
Right.
Yeah.
But you gotta hit a lot of people with the ult on activation. It's not like it can chain react as one pops the other one and gets infected and then pops. That's not
how it works. Yeah. It's just the initial rocket marks, and you want to splash that as best you can. The only other change that I think is, or the lack of change that I think might scare some people from the esports space, Winston not getting a ton of looks. Winston, secondary fire charge time reduction, so it's kind of almost a buff, but the recovery time getting increased, like it's not much of a change. So I think there is some hesitancy that we might just continue to play dive, barring any kind of like map pool change. I think that's a little scary. Anything from the tank front that you feel like is interesting? Maybe Orisa getting lower fall off and a better fortify could be kind of interesting. No,
I'm not sure it will be enough. Because it's hard to say.
Without diving into like the meta aspect or the archetypical aspect when it pertains to Illari, but is it wrong that she feels like she wants to be in like a Sigma Ramattra kind of, like that's the tank you want her with, right? Is that,
yeah,
am I getting the wrong feeling?
Yeah
maybe a Rein every once in a while, but like you want somebody that's like poke oriented that can kind of set you up. And
yeah, she can't dive that well because like,
yeah,
for dive, like she'd have issues getting into the tank location, you know, like to follow the tank, like I don't see that working. Once again, it's hard to hypothesize how all those effects will work out. Maybe you can play with Lucio, I'm not sure. But would that be stronger than Anna? It's really hard to say.
It's going to come through for, it's going to come by testing. Like, that's the thing. And that's the difference between Illari and Lifeweaver is that, like, Lifeweaver is almost impossible to test because of, like, he fundamentally changes how you see the game. Illari is like, oh, this is plug and play. We just have to see how it works. We have to see, like, the practicality of it. Lifeweaver is very much like a 20xx, like, just very difficult to kind of wrap your head around. That said, when it comes to damage, Bastion got a lot of changes. Nothing really leaps out as to making him any kind of better or worse. I don't know, that doesn't scream anything interesting there. Cassidy getting his pants back. Homie's a little thicker now, 225 base health.
Yeah.
Lower fall off damage, so he's going to be in the fight a little bit longer, or in the fight a little bit closer, rather. Magnade still is good. Maximum travel distance of 1.5 seconds, slow amount reduced from 30 to 25%. Let's be honest, nobody cares about the slow. It's about locking people out of movement skills and just clipping people like Violet that are just around corners. You know, that's the beauty there. That's the power. So I think Cassidy, you know, for projecting a little bit, like, seems like he's playable. Depending on like what tank, that's what feels like the driving force in Overwatch 2, at least from my perspective. Kind of interested to hear yours. It does feel like the tank kind of dictates the color. No.
Yes, of course. Yeah, very much so. Like it is. It dictates the color, but like the other heroes and their viability dictates the tank.
Sure, it's a
right. Yeah. Like the HPS that is received by the tank is directly implicative of what heroes are playable in dive and whatnot, right? And
sure.
Yeah, it's super. Once again, like, we will only, like, the only way to figure out what the fuck will be meta by the time PlayOns or the last 2 weeks rolls around is to be in those scrims and see how it develops.
There's
no other way. I don't think this hero is busted enough to say for sure that it's going to be here.
I agree.
And I don't think she's bad enough to say outright like she's obviously not going to be here. It's not a Live Weaver situation, and it's not like a... what was really overpowered? Like Launch Sigma was, I think, was stupid.
Sure, right? I mean, for a couple of reasons, but Launch Sigma, I think Launch Ana... I don't think she needed the clip buff to make people wake up to like her, you know, nano boost giving movement like insane movement speed. It was very strong, and being able to anti people is very strong. Like, there are some pretty like obvious like hits that people may have been sleeping on. And I feel like Overwatch as a general player base is increased in skill enough to like know when the OP hits, you just play it, and she doesn't scream overpowered, at least not yet. It does feel like something that you can wrap your head around to integrate into like scrims. So I think people are definitely going to be trying her and seeing how it, or if she's usable, if she's viable, where she's viable. And I think you guys kind of accurately put, and I would agree with those numbers on the GG Recon YouTube channel on the Illari kind of like, you know, kit overview. I think you guys put the number around like 65-70% chance that we'll probably see her in like the Overwatch like playoffs.
Once again, like this is only like we will see her. She won't.
Yes,
that isn't to
not
say
a hard meta.
Be, yes,
yeah, it's like, you know, a general feeling, a temperature check of like, yeah, you could see her in like a couple maps. Maybe she'll be, you know, she should see some play. It's not a hard rigid meta. You're not going to see none. You're not going to see no Illari. But it really depends on how she functions, because it's subtle. If she's going to be very good, it's going to be like very subtle. Like she actually produces way too much damage and everything is just, you know, kill now. Everything is just hyper aggressive and that could be super fun. But again, we're not going to know. Sombra, you can't EMP Lifeweaver's tree anymore, which is like an inherent huge buff to Lifeweaver. Thank God. He seems a little bit more usable now. On top of that, he got a buttload of changes when it comes to like him being a little bit more tankier. His base health got reduced by 25, but he got 50 shields on top of it, so 25%, you know, not 25%, but 25 technical health a little bit stronger.
Yeah, this also just means like you technically also regenerate faster, right?
Yes, because, yes,
right, like if as your shield gets cleared, then your base HP gets cleared, you round the corner, your shield starts regenerating at the same time that the support passive. And maybe the delay is already achieved by you just like standing on top of your pedal platform. I think this is a pretty big survivability buff, yes.
I think Lifeweaver in particular got a lot of rightful love. Is he any less clunky? No. Is he going to be able to be the throughput healer that you need? Probably not. But what he does bring, nobody else can. So if there is a strategy, this is going to be one of those pocket picks that somebody eventually is going to figure out. Having Tree of Life now, per the patch notes, 50% of the overhealing that the tree does now it gets granted as extra health, as overhealth, up to 100% maximum overhealth, which is very, very strong. The fact that it can't just be deleted by Sombra, the fact that it creates LOS, there are very, like, minute, very nuanced things about him that nobody else really can do the way that he does it. There's not a ton of like LOS creators, May being like the obvious one, but nobody else really does it. Nobody else can do it that also provides like significant healing that isn't just healing. Nobody has any kind of like supportive mobility outside of maybe like Symmetra and Lucio, obviously. Like they're... We're getting closer to seeing an actual unironic Lifeweaver comp that makes sense, but it's just so experimental. Like somebody has to be like some pro team has to just gamble with it and see if it works, because
Vegas is doing that shit, right? Like Wreck Attack already said they're going to tank some more.
And they may benefit from it. They may be early adopters. They may cheese people out just being able to find a way to abuse Life Grip with maybe the new Orisa, with having a stronger fortification, with being able to kind of just run in there and just to be a nuisance, maybe Doomfist, I don't know, hard to say, like being able to just throw a tank in there and be the spear that you need them to be and get kills, but with also having an out in life grip, that could be super interesting. Being able to brawl on points like control or maybe even flashpoint, that's going to be super interesting. Like, I think we're starting to see the opening of the door when it comes to Lifeweaver, and I think he's being a little bit overshadowed by Ilari's light, pun intended, pun very intended, because I think he's also benefiting from this patch very, very heavily.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Outside of that, Kiriko, it's sad that they took away the three times multiplier on headshots. I always thought that was really interesting. I always thought that was dope to see at the highest level, to see somebody like Fielder or Twilight or, you know, Violet just like clip somebody in the head and just eliminate them. Like, that was like a really cool.
Wait, let me quickly see how the math shakes out, because okay, so body damage is 40 to 45, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and then yeah, it's like an 8 damage difference. She now has the same headshot damage as
everybody else, right?
As Ilari.
Ah, okay. So it's bringing that in line. That was the fun part about Kiriko, in my opinion. Another thing to think about with Kiriko that I'm waiting to see content creators come out with their myth busting. I think that's my new favorite lane of competitive Overwatch content, is myth busting. What works, what doesn't, how interactions happen. Can you cleanse Ilari's solar passive arc with her ult?
With Kiriko?
Is that something you can cleanse?
Pretty sure you can.
I would imagine so, right? I would bet on it as well. But again, there are some interactions. Like, does everybody know that pedal platform just kills Grav? Not something you'd think about, but it does, right? It just lifts you straight out of it and you're cleansed. So it's like, I would bet that you can cleanse it, and the fact that it can be cleansed might be a problem, because she does feel like very alt driven. So if you can cleanse it, that makes it difficult to see her necessarily scream into pro play, because we're still seeing a little bit of Kiriko here and there, so it does feel viable, at least at the professional level. Same with Brig being available. Like, there are some really good support options that she's fighting for, that you're gonna have to find a way to argue it. And I feel like it's the offensive potential, but we'll have to see. And it feels really shitty to just say, well, we're just gonna have to see. Is it weird? Am I coping? Is my content brain thrumming a little too hard saying that Lifeweaver might be meta before Ilari will be?
Yeah, that's content brain, I think. Yeah.
You think so? I don't know. There's something about him that makes me want to like give him to a team like Clockwork Vendetta, or like one of those like cheesy gimmick teams, like, oh yeah, and just be like, all right, figure it out. Like, if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be like one of you goofballs, where you just get like the one trick in top 500 that just spams Lifeweaver, and just like get him in a team and get him to figure it out, because there's something here. There's something to this kit that somebody hasn't unlocked yet.
Yeah, I agree.
Ilari does it. To be fair, there is something very like simple about Ilari that is going to be easier to test for. So I don't know. I'm excited to kind of get into the scrims and start hearing about things and how metas are developing. That's always a fun time to kind of be alive in Overwatch League, if you will.
What a phrasing. Great.
What?
What a fun time to be alive in Overwatch League.
That's the time. That's what we got to work with right now, because I don't know how much longer we're going to be alive. You know, it's a fun time to be here in the space, celebrating what we can. And I don't know. It's fun. It's fun to hear about, like back when like Sojourn was being tested in scrims. It's like hearing like who are the early adopters, who's doing really well, what the meta even looks like, how people are adapting to it. Like, hearing those stirrings through the stock exchange, if you will, it teases the brain. It makes you think, and it gets you kind of excited.
Yeah. No one can see it.
And there's something, and you have to stop me if you don't want to talk about this, but there is something that you've mentioned in the past and in Discord, basically, just kind of like hanging out in Discord, which if you want to come support the show, you can just come and hang out. I've seen your name out there. I've seen you join the ranks of the Discordians, the absolute troglodytes that are living in our Discord. God bless them. Love them all. There is something to the idea of content creating around scrims and maybe having anonymity and having it be fun. And that's something that you've kind of like wanted to do. And I feel like that's like the natural evolution of like whatever comes next. Like the stock exchange can still exist, but like the stories of how metas develop.
Yeah, yeah.
That
would be so dumb. Yeah.
It's that stuff that I think people would be really, really interested in, because as we've had on Christopher in the past.
Hit my line, teams. Give it to me.
You got to. You've got there are stories there. And even if it's not necessarily current stories, maybe having fun anecdotes from past stories where, let's be honest, teams like the Shock have their own little scrim bubble. They always come out to metas doing some wacky shit. Krusty's on his tabaki again. And he just has like this different look, and you can kind of tell who's been scrimming with Shock based on what they're playing as well. Like you can, if you have the means, you can kind of read in between the lines, but it's interesting to kind of get the team's perspective on like how it came about, because I think there is a little bit of a disconnect from like the fan to like how the pros kind of think about things. You know what I mean? There's something there, and I think you're onto something. So I do want to kind of give that a look.
Yeah. 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 We'll see.
So yes, if that is something that, you know, teams, every so often I hear that, you know, you may be listening, so hit the boy up, let him know.
For sure. Like, I it would be so dope. Like, of course, like, I'd be sworn to secrecy. Like, look, okay, I've suffered enough in order to have the credibility that I won't ruin your competitive integrity by you telling me what you tried, okay?
Yep.
This, I vow to only release that information after the fact, after a meta comp has established, and I've double and triple checked with you if you're willing to. I could of course always, no, I would never like just ask one team to provide me codes of everyone. I think that's pretty scummy. I would have to have the consent of all teams that are participating in that respective ecosystem and of whose VODs I've gotten. You don't have to necessarily give me replay codes, but more so it would be interesting to get impressions of where it's moving and like get updates and like keep track of, like, sometimes folks will just like have a rough outline, but I want the entire web, right? Like sometimes like someone says, oh yeah, this team ran this and therefore that happened. Well, you only also got your view.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's not the interconnected web of decisions. And if everyone had like, you know, 2 minutes after every day or whatever, just take a quick note, probably helps you as well, in order to like see where ideas were flowing.
Mm-hmm.
It would be super dope content, I think.
Yeah. I think There is not just from a storytelling element, but from like a way that pros think about the game, how review actually goes. There is something to that idea. That idea has real legs. And if you doubt it, even in the slightest, do we need to review what happened in the preseason this year where everybody just started leaking codes and it was like a fun time to just kind of experience like what it was like kind of sitting in a scrim and seeing those scrims and seeing who was good and who was bad. Like, it was content. And that's the one thing that I think we need right now. Like we can't just have everything tied to our chest. And I think I would agree with Yiska in his own words. I think he's fought tooth and nail to, earn your trust. So if anybody's going to do it, I think you can trust it to him. That said, speaking of content, as we get a little bit long in the tooth, obviously you've just dumped a ton with Invasion. Is there anything coming down the pipeline that you're excited with?
I got to hop on the interview train soonish,
But the problem is, like, I'm at RLCS, Rocket League.
Okay.
It's in my hometown, so it just naturally fit. So this weekend will be hard. Fortunately, Overwatch League is also not on. But by next week, I'll have, like, 2 weeks until Gamescom. And there, I can probably make... I just want to go on a heavy spree. If it's at all possible to get folks on interviews, it would be super dope if that was possible. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like get prepared. I'm probably cooking something.
There you go. I will take a minor. I'll use my time, Chairman, to ever so slightly plug something that I was pretty particularly proud of. I spoke to a number of individuals the esports space. And got their story. Obviously, we're as a scene, as an ecosystem, things are being corrected. Money is being questioned, and the people at the bottom of the space are getting pinched a little bit. So I wanted to kind of talk to them and get their takes. And there's some pretty brave folks that had some real gusto to kind of speak up and say some things. Yeah, courage there, I would say. And I was, you know, very honored that they would share that with me. So, yeah, would check that out. It's on my Twitter. It's pinned as well. I think it's called In the Trenches of the Esports Winter. Mm-hmm. Something that it's a long read, but I think if you're into esports, it's well worth your time. Yeah, 309. Alari's here. Super exciting. Makes me kind of want to play. I'm not going to lie. I kind of want to try. That's kind of the level that we're talking about here. So, any last final thoughts?
No, I'm looking forward to how this is received.
Yeah,
I think like initial of peers is like meh, 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10.
Okay,
for the entire thing, I'm looking forward to how Ilari will be making like performing in scrims.
Yeah.
And otherwise, yeah, we have a nice little break.
That's true. Yeah, we have like 2 more weeks before we have games again. So it's gonna be a little bit weird. But till then, we'll see you in 310. See you next week. Adios.
Peace.